We're the Bungie Kids with plasma pistols glowing. It's our podcast show with Brian and friends
and Frankie. Welcome back to the Bungie Podcast. This is Frank O'Connor. I'm hosting the show with Luke Smith, Brian Gerard as usual, and our special guest today, Bungie's greatest sniper, Mr. Luke Timmons.
Wow, that's better than Joe Todd. That's
AKA a bold statement. Abe Froman, as Abe some Froman. Of our fans may know him.
Or the namesake of Camp Froman.
That's true.
Why don't we just get out of the way? Why don't you explain to people what the origin of Abe Froman and Camp Froman really is?
So Abe Froman was, for those of you who are too young to have seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you should basically pause this podcast right now, go to fucking Netflix and get it to your house and watch Abe Froman. Abe Froman is the sausage king of Chicago, as this awesome scene in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Why did I pick that as a gamer tag? I used to pick Big Jim Slade. If anybody knows where that's from, I'll let you guys call in.
Kentucky Fried Movie.
But, oh my God, I'm done. I gotta go.
Wow.
That's from Kentucky Fried.
I dug so deep, you have no idea.
I think you strained something. Like you had a little, you herniated
it's
something.
Amazing.
I knew I heard it somewhere.
So I had Big Jim Slade for a while, and then my account ran out, and then I was like, I don't want to be Big Jim Slade anymore, so I want to be Abe Froman, and then I don't know, it stuck. So
were the other Abe Fromans taken?
Yes, and I actually met the guy who has the Abe Froman, and I was like, I'll give you $500 for your gamer tag.
And
he was like, no.
He uses what? That. Well, he uses that gamer tag to get good seats at restaurants.
But what was funny was that, like, I've looked him up since then. He hasn't played. He hasn't been online.
So he's like, squatting your gamer tag.
Yeah, as far as I know, he's just holding it.
Wow. You know? So how did that?
What if you offer him Recon in exchange for it? We'll make it happen.
That's possible. Could.
Abe Froman, if you're out there, you can have Recon in exchange for your gamer tag.
Amen. Amen.
So how did that turn into having a piece of geometry sort of named after you in a multiplayer map?
So this was to go back to the heady days of Halo 2 crunch when we were trying to pull our shit together to get the game out. We were getting ready for the final E3 before Halo 2 shipped, and that was going to be where we were going to show off some multiplayer stuff. And that was,
I recall,
one of the most amazing maps that we've ever made, which was Zanzibar was taking its form then. And we were doing playtests constantly, and so as the more and more we played, there became one spot which sort of basically you'd be playing single flag CTF. Both teams would spawn, and the defenders would initially make their rush to this one point where the sniper rifle was, and that was the spot that I always went to snipe. And people started. I think it was Carney. Was like, Froman's in his fucking camp again, just camping up there, setting up a tent, and. And that's just how it started, and then it just became known as Camp Froman. And then in this really weird way, we needed a name for the other side, and that became Anti-Froman, which is really wordy to say. And I'm sure there's
and
a better name
really
for it.
You can't really de-snipe someone from there in any useful manner.
So I honestly I didn't even know of the whole plaque thing. Like I didn't even know that the artists were doing that until like somebody showed it to me, and I was speechless. I mean, it was awesome. It was really cool to like put that there and. Now my picture is there for people to stalk, and they put my phone number and credit card number there. It's really, really great of them.
So now the kids know who you are. Why don't you tell them what you do?
It's funny. Like what engineers do is so much dependent on where we are in the product cycle. Like right now we're in like the take an hour and a half lunch and relax. No, I'm kidding. It's not like that. I mean, it's towards the end of the product, my God, is this tool called Raid, which gives bugs. You walk in, you sit down, you press a button, and it's like, you're going to fix 40 bugs today. Those days suck. Like, those aren't really happy days. The happier days is when you're just slamming out new code. So basically, I primarily work on multiplayer networking, for me personally, the type of what I like doing, I absolutely love multiplayer games. I love first-person shooters. So this job for me in particular is like a dream because I get to actually like make things that I love better, and it's fantastic. So I mean, it's when I yeah, like my day-to-day job is basically not only fixing bugs, but also basically, you know, anywhere from features, systems. I mean, for Halo 3, I worked on matchmaking, network co-op, save films, and then just random shit.
I'm just shaking my head because I can't get my head around how one even goes about slamming out code to deliver features like that. I mean, what does that even entail for laymen out there?
So for people who wonder, I mean, basically, I have a background in computer science. We here at the studio, we program in C++. So, I mean, for any other programmer out there who's written, you know, like freaking a web page or anything else, right? I mean, you're basically writing code in a certain language. The only really interesting thing is that one big thing is that, you know, the people out there who program for PCs, they get used to having 4 gigs of RAM, where we have, you know, and God knows what video card, and where we have very specific requirements. So you know, like, here's how much memory you have, here's the processor you have, you know, go for it. So that's the exciting thing about programming for a console, is that you have a box that you get to play in, and basically it's so the language that you're learning is, I mean, it's just like anybody else programming in C++, but the really interesting things is learning, you know, console-based development, and obviously the whole background in there's to programming games, there's a very specific knowledge set that you have about, you know, 3D math and that kind of thing. But mostly it is just like anybody else. You take a programming class, it's the same shit that you're learning, right? I mean, it's not like we have magic hidden commands exposed to us where I'm like, make something cool. I don't know.
That's the way it seems to us. It works.
I watch it. It's like dolphins talking.
Yeah, you go down to someone's desk, an engineer's desk, yeah. And they're like, oh, look at this new – look at the water now. And you're like, oh – oh, so did you just press the button, like, make it cool?
Networking is so less, like, it's so much less glamorous. That's why a lot of people get turned off on it, because, like, we don't get to show sex, like on our screen. Like the graphics guys are like, oh, my God, check out these particles. Everyone's like, oh, my God. And I'm like, look, I made this so much more efficient. Look, they're like, yeah, that's nice
code there.
Yeah, hey, good matchmaking. Good job.
Well, what were some of your bigger hurdles or challenges that you guys think that you had to work through for Halo 3? I mean, obviously Halo 2, I think, set a pretty high bar for console online play, and you guys certainly upped yourselves for Halo 3.
I mean, I think one of the biggest
what's
thing,
the hardest part in
one of the,
making
one,
that stuff
one
work?
Of the biggest things that Bungie does well is we constantly tell ourselves that the previous thing we came out with was not good enough. We need to fucking improve on it. So, I mean, we all knew the problems that Halo 2 had, right? I mean, let alone the in-game, some of the glitching bugs and all the rest of that, there were problems with the – I don't think a lot of people were happy with the way the skill system ended up happening. There were issues with that, with our ELO-based skill system. I mean, just like anything else, you know, it's like, hey, matchmaking, how long does it take to get in a game? Oh, it takes 30 seconds. Oh, that's nice. Wouldn't it be great if it was 10? Yeah, that'd be really awesome, 10 seconds. Wouldn't it be great if you had better quality matches? Wouldn't it be great if – you know, I mean, and then it just sort of takes off from there. I mean, and that's the cool thing about being surrounded by creative people is you have guys who are like – yeah, Halo 2, yeah, that worked out really well. Let's take that, and now we're going to have, you know, we're going to have this crazy XP system where you're going to be able to do armor, you know, crazy stuff, and you're just like, whoa, okay.
Network film viewing, if I recall, was like one of the thorns in your side right till up to the very end,
It was. I mean, and even in Halo 3, I mean, I we know basically, like, network film viewing was awesome, but the second network film viewing of clips, like we knew shipping that we were like, unless you got a really beefy connection, this is going to not be so good. But I mean, you know, but at the same time, it's like, you know, we'd rather have the feature out there. So
sure.
I
mean, yeah. How do you continue to evolve, like, networking? Do you think it gets to a point where until the install base just has more bandwidth, it can only go so far? Or is there still things you can do through smart code and more powerful hardware?
A huge amount of it is having – investing the time, especially for us, to polish our bandwidth model. I mean, that's a big thing that we have right now that we know we can do extra work on. I mean, there's sort of the thing where you want the, you know, like, let's make, you know, hit detection better. Let's make sniping better. Let's make this feel better. And there's, like, all those. Let's make it, like, basically impossible that someone's going to come up with a BXR or a BYB or, a, you know, whatever. There's that work. And then there's the, let's just take what we have and actually just try to make it more efficient, make it take up less bandwidth. And that's what's cool now, is that now that we're back in the sort of the, okay, we just shipped, we can take a look at what we have and sort of say, okay, let's try to make this just better. So, yeah, because, I mean, towards the end of the product, if you have a choice of, like, fixing a bug that involves, you know, like, making a burrito actually a bullet hit it versus, like, make it 2% faster, you're like, yeah, fix the bug. So, I mean, that's a big part of it.
Hmm. Do you think that playing a lot of online first-person shooters actually informs your work?
Absolutely. I mean, I really – like honestly, like, if I didn't have a family and a kid, like, I mean – whatever. Like,
so if you didn't have these big anchors,
if I didn't have these big anchors in my time, like, I mean, I don't know, like, I play
millstones around your neck.
I play Halo as much as I can, and, like, I mean, I was really, really happy to, like, I got to 45, and for me personally, I was really happy with that, and I think I've only played, like, maybe 350 games or something, like, as far as in ranked. But I mean, yeah, like, I would love to play more. There's a lot of games out there that I'd love to play. Like, I just, whatever. I always try to keep up, like, you know, finishing Mass Effect or whatever else. But specifically for shooters, like when Unreal came out, like, I have a PS3. I was like, hell yeah, I want to play Unreal. I want to check out what they got going on because, you know, they got cool ideas, so.
You know, you mentioned that you guys do some of the more less glamorous work in terms of, like, sort of tangible benefits of, you know, as opposed to, like, graphics or whatever. Does it also kind of suck for you guys where no matter how much hard work you put into it, just some kid that has a crappy wireless connection or some shitty ISP suddenly thinks that Bungie sucks and, you know, you guys can't program networking?
It's absolutely a challenge that the people who have the crappy wireless, especially wireless, that's a great example of, like, unless you send me to their house, you're not going to be able to help
them.
Are
you willing,
like,
to do that in the future?
If they're hot and above 18.
You're married.
And
you have a kid.
Yeah, I mean, like, they you know, it's... So it's funny, like, one of the big things we did this time was the NAT notification, the thing about, like, danger, you have a non-open NAT, like, you can do something about this. Like, these are the type of things that, for us, I think that worked out really well. Things that we can let users know, like, hey, guys, we've noticed your crappy connection, your name probably is Frankie, you should do something about it. Like, and maybe they can't, but at least we're telling them, like, guys, really, like, you're losing 30% of your
Isn't
packets.
Isn't there also a pop-up that says, like, we've detected a BitTorrent porn stream? Please disable.
So. Yeah, but only appears here at our end on our big billboard above the...
So ironically, you know it's impossible for us in this building to connect to parties outside our building, right? Yeah. Like, we don't have
Orange
a NAC
network
for this studio that's compliant with
Orange Network.
That means we're going to get it, though. Going to get it at our desks.
You just said that the NAT alert is a good thing, and of course it is a good thing, but it's a mixed blessing, too, because what happens is regular people, me included, I mean, I kind of know how to get my NAT fixed, right? But it's hard to do.
Absolutely.
It's different for every single setup. And even when you do set it up, it can change again. Like, if your device loses its IP and you had it firewall, you know, like, you have to go fix it again. So it is useful and people can know what the type of problem is. So maybe they can get some further help with it online. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's it. It's just, these are just signposts. And we wish there was a way to avoid this. But the reality is that everyone's system is different. Everyone's network is different. Everyone's ISP is different. And we just can't – we tried to do this online. We tried to troubleshoot a general guide on how to do it. Mm-hmm. And there was no way to actually tell people how to turn off their NAT because following those steps in the wrong order on the wrong router would wreck all your connection. That's it. So.
And I mean, the other example about somebody in your house who's sharing your connection, firing up a BitTorrent client or downloading massive amounts of things. I mean, those are real things we hear about a lot.
Or the fridge compressor activating will wreck my connection, for example. Like, if I hear the fridge compressor go on, my bandwidth on the wireless connection will just drop down because it's just radio interference. There's all this weird crap that can affect.
I mean, I don't know how hardcore you are, but I got a dedicated line run that separate from
there's
my
no
internet
going
experience.
Back.
It just pumps straight into my console, no router. In
there's no going back.
I'm working on that, but still. I mean,
their wife is not going to approve that.
I'm curious, though. I mean, right now there is a point of diminishing returns, right? Like, if my ISP tomorrow said, hey, we're now offering fiber in your neighborhood. It doesn't matter because the other seven guys I'm playing with, I'm still bound to their fastest connection.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a lot of ways though. It is the more people, like, especially with fiber adoption, the more people that we can have, that the higher percentage of fat hosts that we can have. Which
how far
for
away
us,
you think we're really far away from that still realistically?
I mean, I know of, in our studio, two people who have fiber.
I think we're still way far away.
Yes.
It's a bleeding edge population down there as well.
But you hit on it earlier where it's basically the consistency is more important than the theoretical maximums. And that's what sucks is that you'll see these services who are like, you know, 1 megabit up. And it's like, yeah, for 20% of the time. And the other times it's going to be lost. I mean, I would much rather have a less and consistent connection. And that's why personally I use DSL over cable because that's what I think is. I mean, that gives me the consistent experience. So, I mean, it's that type of thing which just makes, yes, I would much rather have a consistent experience and a consistent bandwidth than massively fluctuating.
Well, that's what you guys as programmers have to do is try to deliver a consistent experience that's in the middle, right? So you ideally try to smooth it out so all players sort of feel like they're on this even playing field, even though you may have DSL and Frank may be streaming porn.
Yeah, and it's tough.
There's
too,
no maybe about it. let's face it, that's what I'm doing.
I mean, we've also had people who say, you know, like, hey, this is crap. I have eight guys on an incredible connection. Why isn't it like System Link? And we're also like, well, look, guys, we're not optimizing, unfortunately, for
the eight people on this
who
ISP.
Who actually have this massive connection. So it's all about just time devotion of where we can spend our time. And we spent so much time on even more time on our basically the way that we handle bandwidth from Halo 2 to Halo 3. I mean, I hope people think that the big team battle experience is better than from Halo 2 to Halo 3. Now, what percentage is it better? Did we, you know, is it we did made it 10% better? And it's like everyone's like, great, good job, guys. And it's none of those things. Yeah, I mean,
Let's talk about a controversial related subject. Mm-hmm. There's no point arguing about it. Xbox Live works well in large part because it's a peer-to-peer system. What are the advantages of that over dedicated servers? Obviously, dedicated servers would be a great idea if it wasn't for the fact that we have like 5 million people playing at once.
Yeah, I mean, it's for us in particular. We would need a good number. We'd have to ramp up data centers basically spread throughout the world based on our demographic and these. I mean, so there's the bandwidth costs of running the servers and all the rest of it. But there's also a big one is for those of you guys who have used dedicated servers in the past, there's also the latency issue, where latency is very important in our game. And if you happen to you have an ISP that has a certain fixed latency to a dedicated server, like let's say it's, you know, 180 or 200, like that's what you're going to get. It's not going to get, you know, better or worse. But one thing that's cool about peer-to-peer is that if a bunch of us are playing, you know, in Redmond, Washington, like we're actually going to be enjoying a low ping, you know, relatively fast game.
Right.
So you have the advantages and disadvantages. So you have the bandwidth costs, you have the hardware costs and all the rest of that management. You also, though, have this issue, which is if you don't do a good job spreading your data centers around, I mean, latency can actually become turned into a pretty big deal. Right. So, and you still have to worry about, you know, most people do have fine upstream connections to even talk to the server, but I mean, it's great for many things, but I mean, yeah, for us, because the other thing interesting for us is because some games who decide to use dedicated servers, they don't support system link play and they don't support custom games. They say it's dedicated servers or nothing. And so a really important thing for us is to make sure, like, we'd have to figure out, you know, for us, how do we want dedicated servers to fit into our model? Obviously, taking away custom games would be crazy. So, you know,
It's hard to do both well.
It's hard to do both well, and I think that for us, for our for the type of game that we have, and for sort of what we've been going for, yeah, I mean, it is. Yeah.
This sort of works out for us by coincidence as much as anything else. But the other advantage is it gives the thing long life. All we have to do is keep our stat servers running, which is way less complex and difficult than keeping a real game server. And anyone who has a really old version of certain sports games knows once it's gone, it's gone. Mm-hmm. That's it. So it's
and there are other networking models aside from just, you know, a lot of people just focus on sort of the client server model that we have and the dedicated server based model, but there are other models that have been used, you know, successfully that we've looked at as well to say, would this work better for us? I mean, there's some fully connected models that can work that can support a larger number of people. And so, I mean, we do try to constantly look at sort of based on the needs of the current game we're making and what's out there and it costs it out. But yeah, I mean, it's developer time combined with running them, and then combined with again like the, yeah, it's like if we don't put a good amount of servers spread throughout, you know, Europe, and all of a sudden you're playing in Australia, even if you got a whole bunch of people playing in Australia with you, it's very possible that you could be having crappy ass games. So
another thing that we run into a lot, I don't know if we want to get into it too much, is the change in like host client relationship from Halo 2 to Halo 3, and it's something that we get a lot of people talking about and putting films up of, oh, I shot this guy with the mm-hmm. sniper rifle.
Absolutely.
And it didn't, and I see that I hit him, but I shot him 4 times and he didn't die. What is actually happening in that case? Because there is an explanation, right?
Yeah, I mean the sniper rifle, we put a huge amount of work between Halo 2 and Halo 3 to making hit detection and in general times that auto aim is not actually kicking in. So when your reticle is not red, certain Halo 2, if your reticle was not red, you were just wasting ammo shooting at people. There's no way really those bullets, unless you were the host as a client, your bullets are going to be hitting people. And that's because of the way that our basically detection hit detection work and everything work for weapons. So for Halo 3, we actually do a much better job of determining who you're aiming at and basically letting shots. So imagine that I'm going to be shooting at Sketch here. And he's basically on the other side of Valhalla. The way that our model works, without giving out too much details, basically, I can basically be saying that I'm shooting a certain distance from his left shoulder. So basically, for example, that as a client is what I can be sending. So I'm aiming at Sketch. I'm aiming, you know, basically a little bit away from his left shoulder. I'm pulling the trigger, and it's a lot more information that the host can recreate that shot. But what happens is when the client lags or has, whatever, for whatever reason, he's laggy, he has a crappy-ass connection, so he's basically receiving really sporadic updates from the host. Where I believe Sketch is could be massively different from what he actually is in the host box. So I'm looking at Sketch. Sketch is going to be running behind a wall. And I'm like, brap, 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 aiming at his shoulder and shooting. But on the host, he's already behind the wall. He's far behind the wall. So because the client is not authoritative about the way they do damage, like the host is going to line that up and be like, dude, no, man, you're just hitting the wall. So a lot of times on a lot of these films, because one mistake in films that we should have done is embedded help their network quality, because then we could have say like, look, this game is an absolutely crappy game. This film's going to be basically meaningless. But it's a trade-off of basically of security, of client security versus, an authoritative damage state versus their view. So absolutely, we see films all the time where I'm aiming at this guy, I'm shooting, and, essentially the host thinks that this guy's in a different spot. It could be a very small amount. Let's say that you're shooting a grazing shot up against a wall. We're talking like an inch could make a difference between what you think versus what the host thinks.
Right.
And that's just a, hey, man, sorry. I mean, I tried really hard for a long time to make that better. I apologize to all of you.
Luke will come to your house and
I will come to your house and massage your feet. So it is one of these things that you're just like, God, I'm sorry. Also, a big thing is that people got used to Halo 2 sniping behavior, and a lot of people still, Joe Tung included, are
swipe snipers.
They're swipe snipers. They're people who relied on magnetism a lot and relied on auto-aim a lot.
Yeah. So you're saying Joe's a scrub.
Joe didn't have a lot of skill, you're saying, and Joe can't evolve his game to keep up. You heard that too, right? Just making sure.
It's like people who are living in the 80s, and they're like, my haircut used to be cool. I mean, that's pretty much what Tung is doing.
In so many ways, yeah.
When's the last time you guys have had, just a mono-e-mono showdown? Because you're both generally thrown around as sort of among the top two or three in the studio.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe's. Joe is a very, very more aggressive player than I am. I think in the pentathlon, if you guys watch films of the, I don't even know if did we put those films up in the pentathlon.
No, we can't. They're in debug.
Oh yeah, that sucks.
I didn't want to bring that up because that might be kind of painful for you. But as I recall,
I wasn't going to talk about it at all. I was going to be respectful of our guests, and we have company, and the newbies rape the ancients.
Well, you know what's funny is every time I go to BNet, I'm like, is the pentathlon results up yet? Are they up yet? Oh, they're not, because Luke didn't want to write the article.
No, there's 4,000 words of editing on Frank's desk.
It's up. Well, it's coming. It'll be up today.
All right, I'm just saying.
Well, it'll be up before this comes out.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Interesting.
This is coming out in 4 years.
Yeah, you never know. It is a weird time warp thing. By the time people hear this, who knows?
At the time of this recording.
Hey, how long have you actually been at Bungie?
6.5 years.
So did you do some networking for Halo 1?
No, Halo 1. I came out of college, and I was hired as a full-blown just tester. Not a tester writing code. I was pure tester. And Halo 1 was...
Working for Harold?
I was working for Zach, who was working for Harold.
Because Harold gave us the story a couple weeks ago about the sort of last-minute efforts to make sure that Halo 1 almost didn't have any multiplayer, period, that it literally came down to the wire. It was a scramble.
Halo 1 16-player multiplayer was not working 3 weeks before they were shipping.
And how much of that were you guys able to sort of salvage for Halo 2, or did you literally have to start from scratch?
Oh, well, that's the thing, is that Halo 1 had a synchronous networking model similar to our co-op. So Halo 2, everything was written from scratch. I mean, it was the whole distributed networking model was all brand new. And that was Chris Butcher and Bart House who were writing all that code. And I came on. I moved over onto doing networking on that basically around March-ish. And then it was basically March to – basically, that was the death march.
March to, 2002.
No, sorry, 2004. So this is Halo 2.
Okay.
So yeah, March 2004 to when we shipped. I bought a house and didn't move into it. That was a long time. But I mean, I thought I was working hard. Like Chris and Bart had been killing themselves before the year before. So
Bart isn't here anymore. He must have died.
I'm sure he's out there alive and well, Frank.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
So you mentioned that you have a computer science background. I happen to know just from prior discussions that you sort of have an interesting twisted path that eventually brought you to Bungie's doorsteps.
Yeah, I mean,
you didn't always dream of having a career in making games.
Not at all. I really wanted to. I was into computer security. That was my thing. I was really into computer security, and I was also really into political science. Those are the two things I really wanted to do. And so I was really interested at the time with I thought I wanted to do some sort of governmental work, so I would be applying. I mean, I was basically applying for security positions within I applied several times to the CIA, and I was trying to do security stuff, and also then on the political side. Like, they have a whole bunch of different sort of positions that you can apply for. There's the technical side, and then there's also sort of the intelligence side. And I was like, I'll take either. I'll do either one. And it was funny thing about them, you just send them messages, and they just never get back to you. And then I tried meeting people. And then what happened is so I'm running for political office at the University of Utah, and I decide that I want to send out an email to every single person at the University of Utah. So I decided the best way to do that, to get a mass, you know, email list, is to basically break into their email server and grab the list myself. So I'm doing this, and I'm like, oh, this is fun. I'm like, wow, man, there's like 50,000 people on this list. I'm like, this is crazy. And so I'm going through the list, and I'm like, you know, this isn't sorted by like alphabet. Like, what is this sorted by? Oh, it's sorted by student ID. What's a student? Oh, that's the Social Security number. Oh, shit. So I had a list of 50,000 people, their names, addresses, and Social Security number. And it was at that point, like, I'm sitting there, it's like 2 a.m., and like, I have the email that I'm about to send out, and like, and then I have the list in front of me, and I'm like, I'm so screwed. Like, I knew it right when I saw that. So I sent an email to their administrator, and I put a thing in their thing. I was like, hey, look, my name's on this list too. Your guy's security is horrible. This thing shit isn't even encrypted. Like, what the hell are you guys doing? And then I got a call from my buddy 5 months later, front page of the Salt Lake Tribune, which was like, University of Utah hacked, emergency procedures, like counselors you can call. Everyone's canceling bank accounts, credit cards. Like,
wow. So, and they, I'm like, totally ignored your warnings.
Oh, God. Yeah. Like, I mean, and you know, like, whatever. Like, you think about the emails we get about some punk kid, like, hey, Bungie, you know, like, I'm going to come kill you guys. True story. You know, like, oh, whatever. I'm sure they were like, whatever. But then when that hit, that is when things really changed in my life for the next couple of years. It was before I know it, I have the FBI investigating my friends. I have, anyway. So
it was like real life hackers.
You were a suspect for a little while.
So it turns out that in under Utah law, that's a third degree felony. So the second that I viewed that confidential, like, basically just breaking into security is like a class B misdemeanor, but looking at confidential information is a third degree felony. So I'm staring at a felony charge, and ooh, it was like felony charge with like, you know, like $70,000 of damages is what they were claiming, because they had to notify all these people and all the rest of it. And so basically I got a lawyer, and I put it down to a class A misdemeanor. So thank God, because I can like still.
Which is the same as what, like flashing or?
No, it's funny. Like it's really weird. Like, you start looking at what I got charged with compared to other stuff. Like, I could have done vehicular homicide. I could have burned down some buildings and killed people. Like, it's crazy what a third degree felony actually is compared to a computer crime. But you know, I had to take a mandatory criminal thinking error class, because they were like, as part of my like therapy
rehabilitation.
Yeah, yeah. And they taught me that white collar criminals always think that people who commit violent crimes are stupid, but those people think that white collar criminals are just like completely like pussies. So there's actually this interesting when like a white collar criminal says like, oh, this isn't as bad as murder, I just ripped off 80 million people, like that's like a criminal thinking error. So I really do thank my therapist who explained that to me. I still think it's bullshit.
So now you know how to think like a proper criminal.
Yeah, so.
And let's be honest, if a proper violent criminal got into an argument about this with a white collar criminal in jail, I think we know what would go down.
I can tell. So my time in jail.
I
can tell you my one day in jail.
Your time in jail.
My day in jail.
This is good stuff.
I know there was some CIA aspirations.
I'm not even gonna tell that whole story because that story's fucking crazy.
Your whole shank experience.
But I mean, like basically, like. Yeah, like, I don't even know. It was fucking crazy. Imagine 50 guys packed into a room with a shitter in the middle of the room.
I've seen Oz.
It's basically like
I've seen Crunch.
Like the old Bungie office?
Okay, so it's a true story. So this is the way it went down. Like, this one guy's like, hey, man, are you that guy? Like, are you that guy? And, like, I'm like, what are you talking about? And I'm, like, totally keeping it to myself. And he's like, are you the guy who had all those Social Security numbers? And he's like, well, did you do it? This other guy stands up and is like, shut the fuck up. Don't you fucking understand? And it's funny, I'm laughing. I'm like, don't you guys watch TV and know that like whatever I say here could be admitted against evidence against me? So I'm like, you know, I'm not even going to answer that because this guy's screaming at him. And then this guy comes over and sits down next to me, and I'm like, I'm about to get in a fight. Right. And he's like, hey, man, I got my brother. He's got like 80 credit card numbers. Could we do some money laundering, man? You could tell me all about this. And I'm like, this is how crime happens.
Yeah. Yeah. You put, so, people, put loads of criminals with loads of cool ideas
in
one room with a shitter.
Yeah, I mean, before I knew it, I had these two guys who were like asking me to like money, launder money for them, and I had four guys who were offering to be like violent.
You could have been like Stringer Bell.
Yeah. Actually, this is probably not even germane to our conversation, but that's some nice bling you got on. What's going on there?
We
diamonds.
What are you talking about?
It's got that big Rolex. And
huh.
So you never did anything with those numbers, right?
No, I,
so
you know,
basically that kind of put a damper on your government aspirations?
Yeah, it's funny. Once you get the criminal record, it's amazing how like you have to list that on like every job application. Yeah. And
Bungie didn't care, obviously.
So no. So I applied to Microsoft.
We like them edgy.
And I'm like, so Microsoft, then this is how it happened. Microsoft is his job. It's like, I go to Utah State because I got expelled. Suspended, actually, not expelled. Right. Utah State thankfully admitted me. I finished up my degree there. And then I see this ad in their job listings, and it's like, we're looking for a graphics programmer with 10 years of console experience.
Right.
And
you're
I'm
like, that's me.
And I'm like, that's me. And so I called the recruiter, and I'm like, I know nothing about any of that, but I just wanted to talk to you because I'd love to work in games. Like, I think that'd be really cool because I like games. And then she asked me a couple, like she gave me her basic, like, are you really a gamer, like, questions, which right. I – it was hilarious because she's like, what kind of games do you play? And I told her, like, within 30 seconds, she's like, okay, I'll have the interview with you. Anyway.
Well, this was in the old days, right? This was like
when
a
it
long
was
time ago.
Hard to prove that you like playing video games.
Yeah, this was back in the day, you know, Carter administration. And, you know, I remember lining up for gas. Anyway, it was so like that basically I had this interview and they're like, yeah, we don't think you're qualified to be a programmer, but you could be a tester. And I was like, yeah, I don't know, because being at the time, like, you know, I had other job offers from other companies like Micron, Intel, right. The rest of it. But then I went out to Redmond and I got to play this. They showed me this, the prototype Xbox, and I got to play I sat down. I'm like, what is this? And they're like, this is a level of this game that's being developed called Halo. I'm like, what the I've never heard of this game. And they're like, it's by this company, Bungie. I'm like, never heard of them. And they're like, what, you know, haven't you heard of them? And they start listing, you know, like Myth, Marathon. I'm like,
No.
I'm like, you know, I bet I could beat anybody in this entire building in GoldenEye. I'm pretty sure. Head to head, I could destroy anyone here. Anyway, but so I played it, and I like, so basically within that one day, I got to play for about 10 minutes, and I sort of realized, like, again, as a GoldenEye whore, I realized, like, the power of, like, this is it. Like, this could very well be it. Like, it. As far as first-person shooters on a console. So I went home, said, I will absolutely accept your testing offer. I'll do anything to get in that building to go back to touching that game again. And next thing you know, Harold is telling me that I have to test again in Italian and French and German and Korean and legendary playthroughs for 18 hours a day. And, like, my parents came out and visited, and, like, I was trying to explain to them what I do. And, like, we just had this lab set up, and I'm like sitting there with like a bowl of Captain Crunch and like a bottle of Jim Beam, and they're like, this is what your job is? And I'm like, yeah, sometimes my wrists hurt a lot because I play a lot, but, and that was it. Not wow. Due to masturbation. Why are you sick? God, you're a sick person.
That's Frank.
What? Why is everyone blaming it? I'm not the one downloading Trendy Surprise and racking everyone's bandwidth.
Luke. I mean, that was a very open session right there. I didn't realize you had such a check to pass. It's amazing.
Do you feel cleansed?
I didn't tell people. No, I mean, I honestly didn't tell people. It's funny because the recruiters saw this.
Well, luckily, no one listens to this podcast, so it's still going to be a very hush-hush thing.
The recruiters saw it, and I told her right now, I'm like, I have to just talk about this. Like, I got to give her my positive spin.
But from the tech field, people are like, wow, that's fucking cool.
I'm about to give her, like, the big spiel, right? And I'm like, so yeah, like, there's this thing that happened. I have class A misdemeanor, blah, 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 computer crime. And she's like, yeah, that's nice. Okay, so the next building you're going to be going to for your interview. And I'm like, okay, sweet.
Full disclosure.
Yeah, I know. I'm like,
whether
okay.
She was paying attention
and
or not.
I told Zach, then I told Harold. I didn't tell anybody else. And they took it well. But I wanted them to be like, look, if you guys feel you can't trust me with information, like, let's talk about this. But, like, they both, like, just sort of laughed or whatever. I think I told Harold when he was drunk. I tried to, like, really time it well.
Well, you turned yourself in, ultimately.
Yeah,
right?
I mean.
So.
Did that recruiter think you had kind of a bad boy sheen around?
Did you have a full luscious beard back then as well?
I really was big in, like, I had the suit on and I was trying to look, like, totally clean, right?
But they,
like,
saw the jail tats on your knuckles.
Yeah, it's crazy when you have the tears coming down your face. Like,
black ballpoint pen prison tats.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like, you can't, like, I tried to rationalize as well. I'm like, it's temporary, like Captain Crunch. And they were like, so.
Another thing that we, since you are obviously a diehard gamer, we try to ask some of our other visitors just to – some of their all-time favorite games to sort of understand them as a gamer. I know, for example, you're a huge Street Fighter player.
Yeah, I mean,
take that very seriously.
Street Fighter, Street Fighter was probably the first game that I mean that honestly like changed my life. Like it had a meaning above like the physical thing. Like I remember. So basically, like this is back. So kids who are listening who are younger, there are these places that they used to have machines set up that you would put quarters into, and you could play for a certain amount of time. And people would gather there and play together, and it was this face-to-face thing. And these amazing places called arcades. They're dead now.
No, they're called crack parlors. That's is where you go to score cracks or rent boys, I believe. Yeah.
So the first time I saw Street Fighter II, I can still remember there. My family would go on vacation at this place on the East Coast in Bethany Beach, and I'd go to this one arcade night, and I walked up the ramp. So we had just gotten there, and I got in town. I'm gonna go check out my new video games that came in, and I walk in. There's this game called it's Street Fighter I.
Rubber pads or buttons?
Rubber pads.
They had one where instead of three buttons, you had big rubber pads.
Oh no! These are
like whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
No, that was the original design for the machine.
Connor's playing some old shit.
The game was like the detection of controls were horrible. Everything about the game was horrible, but like the experience of going up against somebody and like having that head-to-head experience was like amazing. And then when Street Fighter 2 came out, it was just like. Like I'm like, oh my god, they've done it again. I mean, honestly, the only company at the time, the only game company I knew was Capcom, just because of that. So
you mentioned GoldenEye was something else you obviously played a lot.
Yeah.
Aren't you one of the RTS fanatics a little bit as well?
I absolutely played a good number of RTSs. I mean, that's why that's what was great also about working on Microsoft. I got a chance to work on Age of Mythology, which I had a lot of fun testing.
And you're a big Dota player for a while too, right?
Dota is still to this day, in my opinion, like the refined. I mean, it is the straight edge razor of RTSs that, I mean, like all the rest of them are basically fluff compared to the purity of Dota. Dota's fucking amazing.
Defense of the Ancients, it's a Warcraft 3 mod sketch. And
It is like someone out there is going to make, like I'll just give it away. Someone's going to make Dota and they're going to make it for the console and they're going to make $1 billion.
You don't think that maybe that's already happening? It's coming out sometime maybe this year and it's based on the Halo universe? I'm just throwing that out there.
No, I mean, it could be. It could be. I mean, I think the key to Dota though is that Dota has no fluff.
Dota doesn't have a ton of units.
It's
I'm not familiar with that mod.
You got it. I mean, everyone should play it.
I'm not familiar with the mod.
You should play it. I'll send you a link.
It's amazing.
The bonus is if you play a lot of Dota, you get laid all the time, hard style.
Chicks dig Dota.
So basically, it's just like being married.
Yes, it's precisely.
I'll have to see if my wife wants to play Dota tonight, actually. We'll check that out.
Hey, the other thing I want to mention real quick is that, I mean, for those of you who don't, for people who are interested in engineering and programming.
Yes,
we'd
love to talk about
that
God,
as well. Dear God, we are hiring. We have at least, I think, 6 to 7 positions open for all of you out there. I mean.
And what are you looking for a candidate for something like that? I mean, obviously, it's hard to just walk in off the street with no experience.
Class
to get
a
job.
There are a lot of
prison time is a plus.
There's a lot of people out there who I've met who say like, "Oh, I'm not gonna I don't think I'm good enough to apply to Bungie," or like, "I'm not gonna apply to Bungie because I need to work somewhere else for a while." Like, oh my god! I mean, we've had some of our best candidates have come right out of college, have quit college and applied to us, or have come out of the industry. We take a whole mix of everybody, and I mean, honestly, we are just want to talk to smart, talented. Excited people, you know, who want to make great games.
Even if they're coming straight out of school.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
like
absolutely.
Cable, right?
Cable's a great school.
He's like a math LeBron.
He is.
I mean, I guess there's also the opportunity, like there are for other disciplines, to use like mods and some of these other types of programs for people to really kind of flex their abilities.
Cable did a bunch of StarCraft editing. He built a StarCraft editor. I mean, we that's a huge thing. It's also concrete things that you've worked on. Projects, mods, excuse me, are great examples when you come to apply. But like, my God, like, just send us a resume, give us a ping. We'd love to talk to you. I mean, you're in the process of getting your degree. You've gotten your degree. You're working at some place grinding out kids' games that you'd love to. I mean, please, you know, we'd love to love to talk to you.
The Barbie's Horse Adventures.
Barbie Horse Adventures 3.
Yeah.
So I got a question.
Cats with a Z. We're interested.
I got a question I always wanted to ask a criminal hacker. Right? You know when you're doing your like your Amiga demos where you're scrolling text along the bottom saying how much stuff you hacked and you could do anything. Like they always say, oh, we could have hacked Swiss bank accounts and launched a NASA rocket and blah, blah, blah. How come they never actually do this stuff? Why don't they hack the Swiss bank account and buy an island?
The worst thing I ever did I'll tell you the story too. I'm pretty sure it's past the statute of limitations on it.
Just 7 years.
Mixing a fake fact in it.
Basically, it involved walking into a place with a lot of networked machines and plugging in a laptop that was just sniffing network and then seeing what was coming out of that. That was the time that I realized, like, I stopped going to those places because I realized that this was in the days before most traffic was being encrypted, and it was at the time where I was like. Especially at universities, I'm not saying I actually did not do this one at the University of Utah. I'm not going to name the place I did this at, but it's sort of things where you like what, the more you know, sort of the more careful you get, and I think that was it. I don't know. For me though, once I had the knowledge, it was really funny because I had no desire, especially for the thing I got caught for. I mean, honestly, I'm glad I got caught. If I had been prosecuted for that today with the new penalties, I'd be serving time in a federal prison. So, I mean, it's I'm absolutely glad that I got caught. And to me, the system did what it was supposed to do, which is to fucking smack me down and be like, stop. Here's all the bad shit that's going to happen. And I'm like, okay, yes. I'll never, ever do this again.
He does have a really pretty mouth, doesn't he, Frank?
You have to shave that Ewok.
Hey, have you seen Live Free or Die Hard?
Live Free or Die Hard.
The latest Die Hard movie.
I have not.
It's all about like hacking and sort of this super crimes. Awesome programmer CIA dude that can like bring the entire nation's economy to
Independence
a
Day maybe.
Halt.
Like you can plug an apple in.
I'm actually curious, someone in your line of work, you should go see that because it seems like way far fetched, but maybe there really is a secret computer that you can hack into that would shut down the entire nation.
I mean the most of the things that I found is like, I mean, at least for the stuff that I was doing was especially basically social attacks where you're getting people's passwords, which in themselves are not actually they don't give them access to things, but they're giving you access to then enough machines that basically you're then looking for exploits within them to attack them. I mean, in the field, I mean, I don't know, like I said, I've been in security for a long time, but there's the people who write exploits and the people who use them and the people who then know how to find them. So I mean, it's especially now like all the whole bot system didn't exist when I was doing stuff. I mean, IRC and all the rest of it was just getting off the ground. I mean, it was. I don't know. It was routine that you would basically log onto a system and realize that there were like 80 exploits for the system that you could do to just gain full access to it. So especially when you're talking about government machines, all of a sudden you're like, oh hey, I have access to the East Coast power grid. I mean, so
that so, is Live Free or Die Hard.
So it's exactly what a movie from the 80s.
But again, I mean, like this was a long time. I mean, like I said, that was a long time ago. I mean, so. Yeah.
Well, how do you feel now about some of the jerks out there that try to exploit your code and do things like? Forcing host or bridging or boosting or those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, the best way I can liken it too is that like, so let me give you an example. So I was in West Seattle and I parked my car, right? So I'm playing a soccer game. I come back and somebody had broken the windshield of my car and they tried to steal the stereo, right? So they broke the windshield and the stereo is half pulled out. Now, this is a stock Toyota piece of shit stereo. They broke a $400 window to try to steal a crappy
$20 stereo. Yeah.
So this is my point, is that the people who piss me off are the people who are just basically bored leveraging tools that have been written are like, oh, hey, I'm bored. I'm going to try fucking with like 500 people by just messing with their connections using tools. I don't even know how to use them. I'm following some web guide.
Like the foot pedals for throttling and some of the stuff we
saw
on Halo 2.
That stuff really pisses me off. So the thing that I find
script
is that—
script kiddies.
Yeah, script kiddies. The people that I meet who get actually interested in like basically, they get interested in Xbox hardware. How does Xbox hardware security work? Actually, how does, when they started actually getting into like network-based attacks and they're like, oh, wow, like that's really cool. And then they start learning a little bit about programming. Like that excites me because those kids, like that's how a lot of people get into, that's how people
we
get.
You.
Yeah, it worked for me. And so, you know, doing stuff, and this is the whole white hat versus black hat bullshit. I mean, I think that doing things to harm others under any circumstances, violent or not, you can rationalize it away by being like, it's just virtual. But fuck that. I mean, whatever. Either you're wasting someone's time, you're pissing somebody off. I mean, you know, yeah. Like anything you're doing to harm others is a crappy thing. So,
do you want to go ban some people after this?
Yeah, you know, we give you the tool.
It's kind of
tool,
fun.
Yeah. You know, anyone you like.
The thing that makes – I think the main thing that makes me so – like honestly, in our demographic, people who try to cheat – that's one thing, but like honestly, what pisses me most off, like currently today in our demographic, is absolutely the people who the racist stuff pisses me off more than anything.
Yep.
And the racist and homophobia like stuff is just like
back button mute, bam.
Yeah, it saddens me far more than people who are like, I'm gonna try to get host and I'm gonna try to like cheat to win. I'm like, okay, whatever. You're trying to cheat to win, fine.
Well, you guys have done a lot. I mean, a lot of strides now to detect and prevent that, but you can't prevent somebody who's just an ignorant jerk.
But ignorant assholes. Yep. I mean, are just like. God, yeah. Like these are the guys that I'm gonna have to go talk to someday in the grocery aisle, and we're gonna get in an argument. Like, be a fucking good person. Like, the thing Jesus is that, Christ.
You know? My theory is that the vast majority of them aren't racist or even homophobic. They're just acting out.
No,
they're
just agree.
Acting out. Just getting a reaction.
They're saying the most offensive thing they can think of, and of course it's racism, it's homophobia, it's sexism. In the case of a lot of women, get a lot of hard times online.
Absolutely.
And they're just saying the most provocative thing they can say. And honestly, fingers crossed, they'll grow up to be good people. In all likelihood, they're not going to signal their turns. They're going to merge badly. They're, you know,
like
they're
that time tailgate. We played the frag.
I would like to believe that, but I mean, like, I guess it's tough because, like, when I was a kid, because I was playing with my friends, that face to face interaction, like, I would never be playing Street Fighter next to somebody and be like, hey, you fucking, you know, I mean, like, I would, yeah, you would never do that because they would turn around and hit you in your face.
They would invent the people's elbow 5 years before The Rock.
And so, to me, like, that's how I grew up. And so this concept of the sort of, like, unrestrained anonymity is just such a new concept for me.
That was one of the cool things about the arcade is instant justice would be meted out.
Absolutely.
I think Luke had some questions.
No,
question.
We actually we just covered them all already
on our own. Yeah. So we're on the same wavelength as our fans. Flow.
My main message was, again, please come, you know, email me.
There was a user.
Resumes.
Somebody did submit a question that said, please tell me about your checkered past and brush with the law. So somebody on the website must have known.
Let me see. I think that we've got everything. Oh, why Towley? Someone wanted to know. On the staff page.
Oh, yeah. Bunchnet. I mean, South Park is basically like Trey Parker and Matt Stone are goddamn geniuses and should be like they should every freaking award show they should South Park should be getting an award for the work they do. And
you seen the Guitar Hero episode?
I've not.
Really?
No, I know.
Because you're a Guitar Hero player, right?
I am. I know. But I mean, like,
are you kidding?
I've not. I bet. I mean, like when I think about like the quality of like the Warcraft episode and some of these other ones that they consistently do are just absolutely amazing. Especially not to piss on something like Family Guy or other stuff, but like the quality of South Park is continually amazing. And guys, if you guys ever think about canceling South Park, I personally would chip in money to keep them alive. So,
and if they ever thought about maybe wanting to do some sort of Halo tie-in, we're also very interested.
Oh my God, absolutely!
You know they're listening. So.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, this
another question. And I don't know how familiar you are with the code language that Frank and I have used, but what's your favorite of the upcoming DLC maps between Cotton Ball, Purple Rain, and OK Corral?
Oh my God, I'm gonna have to remember your guys' different.
Hold on, Luke's doing some notes
Purple
for you.
Purple Rain got swapped around though.
Hold on, I see notes being written.
Hardcore code words, yeah.
Oh my God, this Luke's, handwriting.
Luke's scrambling.
So this one is Cotton Ball.
Oh yeah.
That's Purple Rain.
Mm-hmm.
And that is OK Corral.
Right. I mean, I think. So what's the first one again?
Cotton Ball is the first one.
Cotton Ball, I think. I mean, for me, is. I have no idea how much you guys have actually said about it, but I mean, I'm extremely excited about that just based on the history of the series. I can't really know much else I want to say.
What we always said is that it's big and it's
it evokes memories,
and it will contain some tweaked vehicles that might be interesting to some people.
So. I personally have played a long I've played epic matches on that map already. So it's
and there was the epic match that we played on OK Corral. at the pentathlon, that was the only round you guys won, if I recall. Team Slayer 35-33.
Which is funny because our team had really trained for Team Slayer, knowing that anything aside from Team Slayer was really for weaker people. And
I think everyone thought that, but despite that, the committee still enforced these other wacky game types on the player pool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Team Slayer die player.
The thing is, all the other game types are just Team Slayer with like bonus objectives.
And no, that's how you play them. That's not what they're like.
You agree, right?
Lowball is invented by the devil, and he somehow convinced us to put it in the game.
Yeah,
it's
you guys
sick.
Got no points that game. In
Isn't
Lowball.
That the game where you guys got up and just walked away? Because
No. That was in King of the Hill where I actually did go.
Your whole team walked away because there was no way they could come back at that point.
I'm fine with that, with that loss. That loss is fine to me, but the lowball one was like...
You probably should add that at the end of the day, your team did... Eventually, take away the entire cup for the whole event.
Yeah, and it's funny because
even though we only care about Halo, and
even
that's
though
all
on,
everybody ever talks
on paper
about.
I'm a grizzled, most of the grizzled guys are like, "Oh, you're a grizzled now? Oh shit!" And that makes them feel old. So like, I still think that I'm a, I don't know. I'm still getting used to the grizzled sort of name because yeah, it's so weird for me to be grizzled.
I've been making fun of Butcher about the same thing because he turned 30. So I'm like, you're not really a wunderkind anymore. I mean, what you're doing now isn't that remarkable?
Once we got like, I think it was really Bob when like I'd be talking about like I think I mentioned a Tron reference, and Bob goes,
What?
And I was like, oh, I'm like, oh my god. And so I think Matt then told him at the time that that Matt would like. Basically, like, give him a low review score if he didn't rent Tron over the weekend.
Quite right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did he come back?
He did. He came back and he was like, that was horrible.
Yeah. What is he like? He likes Buffy, right?
I mean, I don't
know. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, whatever, anything that's on the WB. Yeah. So.
Big Gilmore Girls guy, listener. I think that covers pretty much all bases.
Yeah. I mean, that's everything. Again, reiterate. Luke's looking for help. We need engineers.
We need engineers.
Bungie.net/jobs.
Next big thing's exciting. I don't know. I mean, I it's weird too because like getting the chance to play like I'm continuously excited to keep playing Halo. And
what do you see? What's not Bungie project specific, but industry related? Like 5 years from now, what excites you? Where are we going?
I'm interested by the stuff that Resistance is doing. I mean, honestly, I'll say it right now. I mean, I think that I can give nothing but mad props to the Call of Duty team for what they did in Call of Duty 4. I mean, I think that they innovated in a way that brought people to play shooters and enjoyed them in a way that I think was going cross genres was absolutely amazing. I mean, I'm a fan of – I've been a fan of Call of Duty forever, and then to see what they did in Call of Duty 4 multiplayer was for their experience in ranking up system was just amazing.
So you're really excited for COD 5 this fall then?
You know what's funny is that I thought some cool things happened about COD 3, but like yeah, like I mean no, like when we play LAN parties, we play yeah,
two.
We basically yeah. Yeah. So I mean whatever, respect for Call of Duty, but yeah, like I mean so that I think is really interesting. There's different ways you can go there, and then some of the stuff that Resistance is doing about trying to just keep jacking up the number of guys in a game. You know, I played Resistance, and I'm a huge Battlefield 2 fan. But it's I'm still interested in keeping that number of guys in a game and making it seem like you're actually all playing together and not just running around in a chat room. Like, yeah, I mean it's really interesting, and I wish them well, but the challenge.
Yeah, the hope is that they're gonna. I mean, from talking to those guys, and Frank and I were just on their show a few weeks ago. Yeah, that it's gonna be 60 players, but broken down into smaller. Objective, like more that parties, like your 4v4, you'll be in like 4v4 scenarios.
With smaller sort of sub-objectives is what yeah, I sure. understood.
Talk sure. about networking challenges, though. I mean,
well, they did a beautiful job on Resistance. I mean, it is
40 people yeah. running amok.
Yeah. You get latency, but it is largely lag-free. So.
It's so funny. Like for us, having a simulated world is like you know having boxes and shit that you can move around, having boxes you can stack, and all the rest of it. It's funny. I'm like. If we took all that away and just had the straight sort of Unreal style or Resistance style, basically, where you have hand projectiles and then guys running around, yeah.
I never thought about that, actually. Is there nothing malleable in Resistance's environments?
I don't know.
Resistance 1, they had stuff that you could shoot and break off of their objectives, but everything else was nailed to the ground.
It's not even something I think about, which is probably testament
from
a
network
well
point of view
it,
so. That you wonder where bandwidth goes. It's the guys in the forge who are like, I'm going to stack 128 boxes and then they're all going to simulate and come down. I'm like, yeah. I mean, that is one thing that our sandbox that separates us from every other game, right, is that – you know, being able to do crazy crap like that and have it all work with networking is one of our signature things. That to take that away from Halo, to think about, go back and play Halo 1 where you run into a table and you're like, wait, what the hell? And you run into a chair and you're like, these are all nailed to the ground. I can't move them. Like, yeah.
I hadn't thought about that. I'm going to show off about that in interviews from now on like I did it.
I mean, serious, but I am curious. Like, let's just say that there's some new console that happens years from now and I'll caveat that, just purely hypothetical. We have no insights into anything happening. But obviously technology keeps advancing. Is there still a point, though, where you guys are still going to be just hindered by the average sort of infrastructure bandwidth that's out there?
You absolutely are.
Are we already at that point right now?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely right now. I mean, to say if we right now, like when we look at our bandwidth breakdowns and if we could say 80% of the market has a freaking – like 1 megabit up, it would be like, oh my god!
Having a faster chip or in the box or more memory doesn't necessarily solve those bottlenecks at all.
Absolutely not. It is in a lot of ways, but at the same time, I mean, it's again, what's the experience you want to deliver with what you have, right? I mean, and a lot of that comes back to do you want guy? You know, for us, it's you know, if we had just guys running around and we're simulating our full world as far as networking's point of view, like, holy crap, I could do that with, you know, I could probably, you could support that on a freaking dial-up under our game. But I mean, for us, a huge amount of our bandwidth comes from everything in our world. You think about how full our worlds are of stuff that you can kick around and move and all the rest of it. I mean, that's where
keep track
a big thing is. Yeah.
All right. I think that that's about an hour. That's
yeah,
long.
That's good
no
stuff.
Breaks.
Yeah.
It's probably the most dense information
crime
show today.
Yeah. Artists have a lot more airy, fluffy stuff to talk about.
Talking about like their
trees,
first girlfriend,
sunsets, baby Jesus.
But we'll be back probably in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I don't even know when this is going out. We have another one that hasn't
even come
out yet.
I don't know, but we'll still be hiring.
Yeah.
That is absolutely true.
Well, thanks, Abe Froman.
Yeah, thanks, Froman.
Thanks, guys.
The Bungie Studios podcast is mixed and mastered by Steve Lopez, produced by Tom Giaconda and Chris Gossett, and hosted by Brian Gerard, Frank O'Connor, Luke Smith, and Bungie Studios.